Welcome to Heart to Heart with Keisha B., the podcast that focuses on the journey of grief, healing, and overcoming unforeseen circumstances. Whether you're dealing with loss or life challenges, this is a podcast that you don't want to miss. I am your host, Keisha B. So take a deep breath, open your mind and your soul, and sit back as we embark on this journey together. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another week of Heart to Heart with Keisha B. If you are a new listener, welcome. If you are a returning listener, thank you again for your support. As you know, Heart to Heart with Keisha B focuses on grief, healing, and overcoming unforeseen circumstances. And as you always know, every time a guest comes on here, they share a story that's not only their story, but it's a story that's going to uplift someone else, because this is why. Sometimes we as people think that we are alone, right? But then when we hear the words and the trials and tribulations that someone else have faced, we recognize at that point that sometimes our stories, our experiences, and our journeys are very similar to someone else's, whether you know them or whether you don't. So our guest today is Connor. Connor brings us not just a small piece of his story, but a very inspirational piece of his story. And so as always, I want to welcome you, Connor, as we do all of our guests. How are you today?
Yeah. So thank you so much for having me, Keisha. I kind of was just reflecting on the conversation we had prior to this, kind of about your story and my story, and how I'm going to kind of approach our conversation today. So I feel pretty ready to go.
Well, thank you, Connor. As I, you know, as I stated in my introduction, many times when one comes on the show, we recognize as we begin to listen that as sometimes we think our stories are very unique to us, we learn in reference to listening and conversing that there's someone out here that has a piece of their story that may be parallel to our own. And so what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and dive into who is Connor. But more so, before we dive into who Connor is today, I always like to go back to one's childhood to find out who were you as a child?
Yeah, I'm actually like really happy we're doing this discussion, because I've done obviously talks before, but I've never really gone into the childhood part. And I guess maybe it would give people a perspective on like maybe how or why I am where I am. And yeah, maybe they can take a piece of it and relate to it themselves. I guess I'd start it off by saying, you know, I'm from LA. I grew up like in the Venice Beach area. And I always say to people, like, I didn't grow up around like celebrities or stars or anything like that. I felt like I had a very like normal childhood still, even growing up in LA. But I guess like what I'm about to say also isn't like super normal either. But I usually just skip this part. But I guess there's two parts to my childhood, I guess, that are like maybe important to know for maybe why I am the way I am today. But basically, I would say that I, you know, was born into, you know, a loving household. I had, you know, my parents both have been there my whole life. And, you know, I would say that in the beginning, it started off very normal and probably like, you know, better than most. You know what I mean? I would say I grew up kind of like in a middle to upper middle level like bracket. My dad was a successful contractor / electrician, and then my mom's a hairstylist. But like I was saying to you, around the time I was 4 years old, my aunt was murdered by her daughter. And after that moment, my life kind of changed. You know, I don't know if it's like necessarily 100% the reason, but, you know, following that incident, my parents ended up getting divorced about probably like a year or two after that. And, you know, I would say, and talking to you also about your story and considering a lot of other people's stories as well, like I still, even with that happening, as much of a tragedy as it was, like I don't feel like I was dealt necessarily like the worst deck of cards in that sense. Yeah. And I also there's also people in that situation that were hit way harder than me, right? Like, obviously, you know, my cousins who that was their mom, like that's a way worse, you know what I mean? So I sometimes don't even talk about it because I don't try to like make it about me, but I guess in the context of maybe like why I am the way I am, I would attribute part of that to it where, you know, I had one set of circumstances in life and then like with the blink of an eye, like it's just different. Right. So it's all like on the news and all of a sudden I'm like living in a different place. My parents aren't together. We're dealing with that. So, you know, I would say my childhood was maybe a mixture of that. Plus I have like a dad that, I don't know if you've ever watched like the Tiger Woods documentary, but like I had like a dad that was very similar to that. Besides the incident that happened with like my aunt and my family, I would say that the other like kind of key determining factor for maybe why I am the way I am is because I have a dad like that is very similar like to how like Tiger Woods's dad was in that documentary, where like from the age of like 3 or 4 I was like being developed into being like this like star athlete kind of person, you know. So and I actually, when I was 10 years old, I was the national judo champion in the United States for my age bracket. And so like I don't know even if you know who like Ronda Rousey is. She was like a huge UFC star, but like she was someone where like we would both train at the Venice Dojo and like my dad would pick her up from her place in Santa Monica and we'd go to practice together. So like I was in that like circuit. And so I guess really looking deep at like maybe why I am the way I am is, one, like I just was dealt this like devastating situation just out of the blue, like a black swan event when I was like 4. And then after that, I had like this dad also that was just on me like every day about like training and I had to be the best. And he's still like that, by the way, till this day. But I guess maybe that's why like I have this feeling inside of like I constantly have to be doing more. And then also like this feeling as well, maybe of like, shit, like shit's good right now, but it could end tomorrow type vibe. So I would say like, that's kind of the two like main elements that I still feel to this day. And I don't know if it's like particularly just because of those two instances, but like that, I would say that was definitely some like key events that happened in my childhood that I definitely haven't like talked about before that maybe people would like be like, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I do. You know, I think you bring up a very good point, right? Like, cause I'm a parent and I've had expectations of my older children. I have expectations of my younger child. And sometimes, you know, we as parents, we want these capes on our back because we want all these accolades for ourselves that we've done such a great job raising our children, right? But sometimes the expectation that we put on another human being, even though they're our kids, maybe a little bit too much for that person to take on, right? But as kids, you know, sometimes there's kids that are like, well, I'm going to trust what my mom says, I'm going to trust what my dad says or whatever. But sometimes we as parents never go to our children to figure out if what we're doing is too much, right? If it's too much pressure. And as a therapist, you know, what I always say to people is, in life, you know, chronologically, you may be a certain age, but sometimes behaviors and patterns are based upon trauma that you may have endured at a very young age. So I think that you brought those two things together, that as you look at life and you look at things that you do today, is it a contributing factor because of what you may have endured at such a young age of 4 years old?
Yeah, no, I never really like thought of it, but I recently had like talked to someone about that instance in particular. And there's been some stuff with my family where that's like coming back up again, around that case. But, it's just kind of the way I would describe it sometimes to people too, is like when it happened, I was so young, right? So like for me in particular, I went from like living in like a bigger house with my family and stuff to all of a sudden a year or two later, my parents are divorced and now I'm like sharing a bedroom with like my sister and we're in a two, you know what I mean? In a waste. But like at the time, I didn't even think of it as like a downgrade or like, you know what I mean? I was so young right. that like, I was just, and the other thing too, is like, there's been people that, like I said, have been in way worse spots. So like, I don't try to get the pity card from it, but like, there's right. definitely just my, from that experience, I just always kind of have this feeling of like, you know, things can be good right now, but things can definitely change tomorrow. So I try mm-hmm. to just like soak it in while I can, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Yeah,
it does. And, you know, unfortunately, and I'm going to say it for what it is, right? Unfortunately, trauma puts us in places like that. It puts us on a defense mechanism, the what ifs, right? It doesn't mean that people don't live like that normally. But yeah. I know that one of the aspects of trauma is that what if this happens? So I better soak up, like you say, as much as I can right now, because I never know what can change tomorrow, what's going to alter my life tomorrow. And what I hear you say, Connor, is that because you've already experienced that at such a young age, even though you didn't recognize it was trauma at that time.
Yeah, that would be kind of the way I would describe it. Cause it just like when you're that young and something like that happens, like I didn't even really fully register it. You know, I just mm-hmm. was kind of going with it. So I think you bring up a good point.
Mm-hmm. So as we talk about and thank you so much for opening up to tell us that, right? Because again, yeah. sometimes it's hard to talk about stuff that you don't regularly think about on a regular basis, especially with strangers, right? So let's talk about as Connor began to develop into his teenage years. And again, we know how life can be as a teenager, but we also know how life can be when things are shifted up in your life. Was there ever a time in your life that even though you wasn't aware that the trauma may have caused other issues throughout your life, are there any other things that happened throughout your teenage life that when you sit back, you're thinking, man, I may have been involved in some destructive behaviors?
Yeah, like, I guess, you know, I definitely, like, I'll say this too. So, you know, I ended up getting sober at 19. And I'm still sober today. So I think I have like 13 years and some change sober or something like that.
Congratulations.
Yeah. I'm not going to like sit here and say that what happened to me at 4 or whatever else happened in my life is why I started, you know, drinking and stuff like that. But, you know, that was another thing that happened too. I mean, I grew up in LA, right? And in Venice mm-hmm. in like the 90s and 2000s. So it was definitely a lot different than it mm-hmm. Is today. But yeah, I mean, it was something where, you know, by like ninth grade, I was drinking and whatever. So it was, I would say the biggest, like the next hardest thing I went through in high school was, you know, I won the national judo championship when I was 10 and then I quit. I had mm-hmm. qualified for the Junior Olympics. I had made this deal with my dad. If I won the nationals, I could quit. And he let me quit. Now, the next day, I go into my bedroom and there's a tennis pamphlet on my bed. So right mm-hmm. after that, I get thrown into tennis. And so then it turned into me playing tennis every day. And so then I would say the next thing I kind of went through was like I had this weird double life where in high school, I was like a pretty good tennis player. I mean, I have like friends that either are or were pro, and I would say I was in the best bracket, but I was kind of like the middle to lower middle guy of the best bracket. You know, I was like probably mm-hmm. a guy like, you know, something in that realm. The next battle that I kind of faced was I was like living this double life where I just wanted to kind of drink and party with my friends in high school. But then I had a dad who like was expecting me to be like number one, you know, mm-hmm. and it's just the constant feeling of like letting him down and like, no, it's not good enough. And this, you know what I mean? And so that was definitely another thing that I went through, you know. Luckily, you know, by my freshman year of college, I just had enough and I ended up getting sober and haven't had a drink since. So, and then I ended up playing college tennis. I played 3 years of college tennis in D3 at this college called Cal Lutheran. And then after that, like number of years down the line, I ended up playing 1 year of club tennis at USC. So there was somewhat of a happy ending to it, I guess. Right. But, yeah, but still, it's still always that feeling of like, for one, never accomplished what I did like in judo with tennis. Just, you know, maybe I could have been better, but
sometimes it's not easy for people to just stop, right? Using drugs or put down the alcohol. Tell us about how that was for you and what was the turning point that made you say, this ain't it. Like, I don't want to do this. I got to figure out a way out, and you did it. So take us through that and how you was able to gain the courage to do that and the strength more so, if anything.
There's this saying in AA. I think it's like, it starts off with just being fun, and then it becomes fun with some problems, and then problems with some fun, and then it just becomes problems.
Right.
It switched from, you know, me just having a couple drinks or having fun with my friends to all of a sudden, you know, the night before a tennis match, like the big nationals, I'm like puking out the side of my like house, or, you know what I mean? So like, it just got to a point where I knew for a while that, you know, I probably had a problem. So by the time I was 19, I had already been drinking for a number of years and stuff. So it was nothing new. So that's kind of how I got to that place with it.
Mm-hmm. Was your family, more so your dad, was he aware of your issues with alcohol?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't find out originally, but then as time went by, yeah, as, you know, it got a bit more apparent and stuff like that. And then it just became obvious, like in some tournaments and stuff like that, that, you know, I was part of this and that. And so it was hard. I more or less felt like I was letting him down because I felt like it was his dream. Like, you know what I mean? Because like, I'll be honest with you, I never really liked judo or tennis like that, you know, like. And I'll say this to anyone else that maybe went through the same thing. The way I feel about work and like entrepreneurial stuff and business stuff, I feel like I'm like a very dialed in pro. Like it's all I think about every day. And it's like my love and my passion. And I'm always thinking about ways to improve myself or get better. I never really felt that way about sports in the same way. I think the hardest thing out of that experience was like, you know, I'm not going to like say I could have been Djokovic or something, but like I definitely am like athletic and I have the skills and stuff, and I could have been a lot better than I was had I have really been in love with the sport and given it my all. And I think that's like what really hurt me the most, because I wasn't able to like give that to my dad, if that makes sense.
It does. And so, Connor, I want to ask you a question, and this may be a little bit uncomfortable for some of our listeners because somebody may be able to relate to this. What would you say to that parent who is steady pushing their child and sometimes trying to live their dream or their ending of their sports career through their child? What would you say to that parent?
It's like, it's such a double-edged sword, right? Because the way that I'm geared now today, because of all that, it like changed my life in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? Like I have this like constant like fire inside where like nothing I do is ever enough. And I have like, if you look into my living room right now, there's all like plaques and whatever the hell else, there's like medals and shit on my next to my TV. But like it never, I feel now like, it's never enough kind of. Right. And I'm constantly, I don't even know who I'm trying to like do it for. And you know what I mean? But like,
it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. But to the parent, you know, I don't know. It's tough, right? Because I guess now in hindsight, I'm like glad my dad did it, right? I don't know. But if I had a kid, I don't know if I would be that way or if I would just kind of want them to be happy and like live a normal life. You know what I mean? So I actually don't know what I would say, because I'm actually really happy with how I am today. And I don't think I would want it any other way, but it's also, you know, not very typical for someone to like constantly be thinking about how they can like keep one-upping their situation. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It's a tough one. I don't know if I can give advice on that. I might be too close to the eye of the storm.
Well, no, thank you for being very authentic in your answer. I don't want you just to give an answer just to please someone. I mean, I want people to know that this is tough, right? And so again, thank you for being very authentic in the answer in which you have given.
Right.
So Connor, as you talk about who Connor is today, and that Connor's always in this mindset of entrepreneurship and what are you going to do next? So we hear you say that you went off to college, you played tennis for a little bit. What was life like thereafter? And when we talk about the entrepreneurship, is there an aspect in your life that you got into entrepreneurship?
Yeah. So basically I got sober like January of 2012. I was just starting my second semester of freshman year of college, and putting together events kind of became, or it did become, my new addiction in a sense. Mm-hmm. And so it was one of those things where once I got sober and started doing the events, like, it took off very fast. In a sense where the first event I did in January, I did one on like New Year's, like a couple of days or like a week before I got sober. But like, I would say the first one was in January. And then by like March or April, I had put together like the Project X party that ended up on the news. And I have it on my YouTube page. Yeah, it has like a million views on my YouTube page. And then by the time it's like July of that same year, I'm like booking a 18 plus nightclub in Hollywood, and I'm booking like YG to perform, and I'm like selling hard tickets on Facebook with my own money that I was making from teaching tennis lessons. So mm-hmm. It was like something where like it happened very quick. The progression, I just kind of always knew, I was like, if I start drinking again, that's kind of like my Achilles heel. Like, I'll just lose everything. So That's kind of how it started. I guess after that and my whole career in life, it's always kind of just been building and building on top of what I had just done. So, you know, mm-hmm. I started doing the house parties, that got big. Then I started going on Google and booking artists and renting out 18 plus nightclubs and selling tickets. Then all of a sudden, by the time I turned 21, I'm getting invited to all the big 21 plus nightclub spots. And I'm getting hired by all of them to start bringing out all of the celebrities that are like in my generation that mm-hmm. I knew from going to my other events. And then from there, I got hired at Universal Music Group at 24 as like an A&R and a manager, probably because they wanted like a young person that knew artists directly and could put together songs and knew kind of what was going on in the culture. And I did that and discovered an artist, developed them, and I got multiple platinum records during that time. I even got credited on a Grammy. And then I left that, and then I opened a nightclub that I was a co-owner and partner in. And so it's kind of just been, each time it's been another step along the way. And I'm definitely giving you the highlight reel because there was a lot of failures and roller coasters going down into the ground at certain points. But that's kind mm-hmm. of been the trajectory. I never really had a plan, which is a nightmare in itself sometimes, too. I mean, it's great when the hit is there, but that's kind of like what's gone down so far, at least from by the time I was like 19 when I started that, so now I'm 32. So
I think you brought up a very important part, and I don't know if our listeners have heard this. As you stated, you gave us the reel of all the highs, right? So obviously the people that's on the outside that are entertained by the entertainers, whether it's through videos, whether it's through music, you know, it's the glamorous life, should I say, that we sometimes see on the outside, right? But talk to us about the misconceptions that people have about the entertainment world, because as we know, there's all kinds of people out here that's aspiring to be an artist, you know, whether singing, dance, whatever their skill set may be. But we also know there's a side that many of us do not know about. Would you mind sharing that with us if you can?
Yeah. So I guess from my experience, like I said, I definitely don't come from the worst deck of cards. I also don't come from the best deck of cards, but I can just give you my perspective. So mm-hmm. from how I came into this, you know, my dad's in the or was in the electrical slash construction business. My mom was a hairstylist. So I went into this not knowing anybody, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how much things should cost. I didn't know anything. I had to learn it all on the fly and a lot of times the hard way. You know, I guess it's similar to any kind of business when you're getting into it. I just feel like if people can smell that you're fresh or new and they don't, and you don't know what you're doing, like you'll just get taken like advantage of every step along the way. So whether it's, mm-hmm. you know, the artist manager is charging you extra for them to perform, or the venue ends up charging you a higher bar minimum, and like the just things that like, I just, there's no way I would have known any of this stuff. Right. And then on top of that, I'm putting up my own money for it through the tennis lessons I was doing. And then it's like, how do you even trust the person that's collecting cash at the front door? How, like, so these are all things where in the beginning, you know, oftentimes there was times where I would make a lot of money, and then there would be times where I didn't make a lot of money. And sometimes there would be nights where it's packed, but I'm still losing money because my crowd is my age. They're like 19 and they're not buying enough. They can't even buy drinks at the bar. Right. And so I'm not hitting my bar minimum. And so it's packed and someone big's performing, but yet I still am in the hole a couple grand. Right. So mm-hmm. these are things that I'm going through. And I guess during that time, it's like, I always would be like, why do I keep doing this to myself? Like, I could just be keeping my tennis lesson money and like living a decent life. Whereas now I like owe this guy this much money. By the way, I always paid everyone back. Like, I owed my neighbor. Right. Yeah, you know what I mean? But I paid everyone back. It just would take some time sometimes to work it back from the tennis lesson stuff. But that, it was just experiences like that every step along the way. I felt like, I feel like every single time I've done something new, like I don't have like a negative outlook on the entertainment industry. And there's been like mm-hmm. a ton of people that have helped me and been supportive too. And I'm sure that it's like the same business, but yeah, I feel like every step along the way, like someone tried to get their lick in with me. But then once I experience that, then I'm like, okay, like now I know how to build on that and that'll never happen again. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that's what it's felt like for me personally, but right. I don't know if I'm any different than anyone else coming up that way.
And that's what I was about to say. It sounds like to me what I heard you say is that number one, you went into it not knowing what to expect. You just went in it based upon your aspirations and your determination to be successful.
Right.
But alongside of that, there are some things of the unknown that sometimes can sort of swamp you up. You know, it's good when it's good, it sounds like, but it's bad when it's bad. That's what it sounds like I heard you say, Connor.
Yeah, like there's been so many times where I just even felt lost. Like, you know, I would say probably by like 2016, I was like the biggest or like hottest promoter in LA, at least like for my age. Like, I was bringing out pretty much every celebrity that you can think of that would have been going out at that time, or you know what I mean? But I knew mm-hmm. I actually at that time was the most nervous because I was like, I'm not going to like get bigger than this. Like, I don't even know where to take this. I thought maybe I would try to pivot like into acting. And so I was going to like acting classes for like a year, maybe year and a half. And then out of nowhere, that's when the Interscope thing happened. And then I just ended up in the music business. But like, I wasn't even trying to do that.
Right.
Yeah. So like, and that's happened so many times like throughout my career where I thought I was trying to do one thing and then another thing out of left field happens and that ends up being the hit. I, for one, stopped trying to make sense of it anymore. And two, I at least have seen it happen a number of times now. So now when I am like in like a waiting period, I don't try to like sweat it because I know that like there'll be something else that happens. I would say the hardest time I went through was COVID. Because 2019, I was working for two different nightclubs. I was working at Universal Music Group. I was also working with this other, like app. So I had a lot of things going on, and like the artist that I had originally like started working with when he had a couple thousand followers was like at Coachella and like had a song out with Halsey and Travis Barker, and I had just gotten this producer I was managing placed on like Dua Lipa's album. And then by, I think like October of 2019, I decided I wanted to leave to start my own management company. And then literally like 3 or 4 months after that, COVID hit and wiped out everything from the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I went from being in a situation where I was like 2019, I was like super hot. And then 2020, it was just like crickets. Mm-hmm. And then to the point I was trying to make before, I had been like kind of brought the Off Sunset deal, I think even maybe before COVID had hit, like right before or something like that. And it was one of those things, like I almost didn't think it was going to happen, or it was kind of in the back. I actually thought that I was just going to do music management and I was going to like find some huge star and become a big music manager. And then it just ended up happening that we opened Off Sunset and it was just like a huge hit. It was maybe the biggest thing I've done so far, right? So I don't try to make sense of it anymore. And I feel like now too, people saw me kind of go through where like I was super up, and then like there was just crickets for a year, and then I just came out of left field again with a huge hit. So I, for one, knew when Off Sunset did open that it wasn't going to last forever. I was like, this is going to be like a 2 or 3 year burn. And then I'll figure out my next play. But yeah, it was like a mix of that. And I already went through COVID, right? So like whatever happens after that, knock on wood, I hope it's not worse.
Right. So as we've talked about who Connor was, let's talk about who Connor is today.
Yeah. So, you know, another reason too, why I feel a bit more grounded now than I did in my 20s is, you know, during the pandemic, I had, because I had originally dropped out of school. I dropped out from Cal Lutheran when I was in my fourth year, because the nightlife stuff just totally took off. And it was just so hard for me to try to drive back and forth. The school's like 45 minutes to an hour away from LA. And so I just fully committed. So during COVID, I went back, I graduated undergrad from Penn State. And then during the time actually at Off Sunset, I was going to USC and I still go there now. So I got my master's degree in law, and then now I'm finishing my MBA and I have a year left of that. So I work for a few different, I guess, political organizations. So I'm the chair of major events for the Stonewall Democratic Club. And then I also got elected as the outreach officer for the neighborhood council for Del Rey, which is in LA. So I'm working with them, doing some other stuff on that end. I also am producing music now. So one thing I kind of realized from what I was doing before is like I don't know if a lot of music industry people operate like this, but like a lot of times I would be like, hey, big artist, I know you, let's get you to record on this producer's beat. And then I would just kind of have them put it out. And then I kind of realized, I'm like, why wouldn't I just curate the songs myself and be credited as an artist as well? So I have one EP out right now that I did as a collaboration project, and that has like around like 100,000 streams. I'm not like doing it with a label, but and then now next I have a new EP coming out with some big artists. One vocalist, her name is Maxine. She was on Black Coffee's album, Subconsciously, that won a Grammy. And then I'm working with this other vocalist named Sonia, and she was on Anderson .Paak's album, Ventura, that won a Grammy. So I'm getting now some pretty good people on them. And I guess I'm kind of like an electronic version of like DJ Khaled, where I'm kind of like more curated. And I'm not knocking DJ Khaled. He may produce more than I do, but I don't technically produce. I'm more just curating what I want it to be like. And then I get everyone featured on it, and then I put it out, and I'm also an artist on it. So I'm doing that. I'm doing the events with the civic groups, and then working on a few different deals. Like I just had helped close this deal with this YouTuber named David Dobrik. My buddies have this consumer packaged goods company, and so he has this pizza brand. So I helped broker that deal. So I'm kind of just putting together deals, building up my music catalog, doing some events for the city and some political groups, and then finishing my MBA. So that's done in a year. So I'm kind of in a floating period again right now, but I'm sure if you check back in a year from now, hopefully one of these things will be like the next hit that I'll ride for a few years. So that's kind of what's going on in my life right now.
Wonderful. It sounds like that you're definitely, like you said, doing some very impactful civic type things to uplift not just you, but other people as well.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of people going through hard times right now. So I just try to be as supportive as I can. So whether that's, putting together an event for a good cause, or even like just went to like a town hall meeting where there's folks that are trying to get like a bill passed to put a cap on how much rents can get increased each year and stuff, especially folks that have been impacted by the Altadena and Palisades fires and stuff. So
yeah,
there's I'm just trying to stay active and be of service too. So
yeah, because we're definitely in a state of the world right now that we all need to be each other's helpers, right? We all need to lend a helping hand, because you just don't know what your neighbor literally may be going through, even if they don't talk about it, So just being a humanitarian to me will take people a very long way beyond what we see on a day-to-day basis. That's how I live my life, Connor. I believe that if you do good by people, good will come to you regardless of when that good shows up, And so if more people in the world will be able to carry that, I think that, I'm not going to say this is the worst place to be, but there are some things right now that is going on, I think, that draws concern for a lot of people in regards to just being there for your neighbor. Because again, we never know when someone's going to be there for us.
Yeah, no, for sure.
What is one piece of advice that you would give to our listeners just based upon your life and your life lessons?
I would say don't give up, and you just got to keep pushing. And if you give everything your all, things will fall out of the sky sometimes, and and there'll be some luck along the way, and then also what I always try to give advice to people in the entertainment business, especially if you want to stay in it, is be nice. Be very nice to everybody. Yeah. It goes a long way.
It does. And sometimes that's hard for people, but like you say, it definitely goes a long way.
Yeah.
Yeah. My mother always taught me growing up, sometimes you have to kill people with kindness, even though on the inside it may be killing you to be kind. It's what are you trying to get from this, right? And we all should be trying to get something that not only just benefits us, but also benefits other people, because again, we are our neighbor's keepers.
Yeah, no, it's definitely the being nice thing to everyone has really gotten me a long way. And if you're not, it'll catch up with you.
Yeah, it will. It will. So Connor, as always, I want to thank you, as I do all of my guests, for coming to Heart with Keisha B today and sharing your story and leaving a message for our audience to be able to grow from, even do some self-reflection as well. So as always, everyone, I want to thank you for listening to Heart with Keisha B. Again, if this is your first time watching and or listening to Heart with Keisha B, I hope this is not your last. But let me tell you where you can find us. You can find us on Facebook, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Pandora. Thank you for your continued support. Have a great day. Thank you for tuning in to Heart with Keisha B. Remember, grief may shape our journey, but it doesn't define who we are. Healing is not a straight path, but with every step forward, you're creating space for hope, strength, and new beginnings. If today's episode brought you comfort or clarity, share it with someone who might need it too. Let's continue building this community of compassion and resilience together. Until next time, take care of your heart, your mind, and your soul. Honor your journey and always know that brighter days are ahead. I am Keisha B, and this has been Heart to Heart.